It's time for another episode of The Accidental Entrepreneur.
Well, I think the key is it's not just having a good idea for a business. It's not just knowing that your product or service is desired by the consumer,
right,
and therefore you should go into business.
Right,
you
and
have
everybody's going
to
buy first, it.
Right. You have to know, first of all, about yourself and your abilities, and it's not just dealing with that product or service. When you're in business, you have to wear all the hats and see to all the responsibilities that running a business entails. So whether you do it yourself or you
right.
outsource and turn to other professionals, it's still all the responsibility is on you. And so you have to be that kind of person who is willing to take on that responsibility. And running a business is not necessarily a 9-to-5 occupation.
Not even close.
It's 24/7.
Right.
Is more like it.
Yeah.
For many people. And when you hear, I'm always amused when people say, oh, I want to go into my own business because so then I can set my own hours and I can have this flexibility. And that may be true to some extent, but it also means that if something happens, you're the one who has to see to it, regardless of the time of day or if you're on vacation or what.
Right.
So you have to have that kind of personality. I think that's one thing. And then I think you have to be...
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode.
Hello, I'm Barbara Weltman. I'm the founder of Big Ideas for Small Business, Inc. We publish an idea of the day to give you a tip or a resource to help you with your business, and we publish a monthly newsletter, Big Ideas for Small Business, again with articles and information to help you run your business.
Welcome to the Accidental Entrepreneur podcast. Now, Barbara, you're down in Orlando, you were saying, or no, Vero Beach, right?
Vero Beach, Florida.
Okay, very good. And is it nice weather there today?
Fabulous.
It is, okay. It's a little bit milder in New Jersey. I think we're getting snow this weekend, so everybody wants to get out of here. So what I'd like to do is spend some time with you. I know you have a big following. You do a lot of work with small business owners. But maybe you can go back, because I know you're a lawyer like myself. We had mentioned off the podcast, recovering lawyer. Maybe I'll get there someday. And talk about your background in law and then how you kind of got into what you're doing today.
Throughout my practice, I dealt with small businesses. I helped them incorporate. I helped them do buy-sell agreements and do succession planning. And I did taxes for small businesses. So I was always within the area of small business. And I found that over the years, I was kind of giving out the same kind of advice and information over and over again.
Right, I'm
people
the same
have
way.
The same questions,
yeah,
right?
Sure, absolutely.
Right? And so I started to write about various topics, and over time, my writing kind of eclipsed my practice.
Like publishing books and articles and...
Exactly. I published a lot of books. I blog for a lot of sites, including Paychecks on a regular basis,
uh-huh,
and various other Fortune 500 companies from time to time. And I do webinars for them and provide content for their site, or they want me to post articles with their information on my site. And so it's always interesting, never dull.
Right. So did this just develop out of your practice where people were asking you, hey, could you write an article? Or was it something you sought out with a publicist or on your own? Or how did that kind of develop?
Because
you're a business owner too, right? I mean, you're a small business owner doing the same thing everyone else is doing.
Well, precisely. And when you're an attorney, a solo practitioner, you're in business.
Right.
And that's so you personally experience the same issues that all small businesses face, which is things like, you know, how are you going to save for retirement, and
right,
how are you going to have your health coverage, and all of these issues, and dealing with government regulations, and the list goes on and on. So you have to kind of think about these things. And the way I had worked for a publishing company when I got after law school, I worked and did some writing, and
So you did work in publishing for a little while.
So I did work, yes, and so on. I kept my finger in it all along,
the
and then I was very fortunate in that that people reached out. I had a website very early on, back in the day when people didn't have websites, and so I was found very easily, because there wasn't a whole lot out there.
Right, there wasn't as much competition as there is now.
There was not much competition. So one of the first places that I started to do work for was Staples.
Oh, okay.
And so for many years, we did a tax center during the tax season.
Like on their website?
On their website,
okay.
Yeah. They don't have that anymore, but this was something that we did for many years, where I would answer reader questions and post articles and that kind of thing. And so that was the way these things seem to work is leveraging.
Right.
That once you do one thing, then you gain credibility.
Right, sure.
And then it leads to something else. And,
right,
and I've been really fortunate. I was very fortunate in my practice that all of my clients came through referrals.
Right.
And so the same thing with the writing opportunities and doing books, and publishers came to me.
So because it wasn't such a noisy space, they kind of sought you
initially
out.
Initially.
Yeah, so Staples found you is what happened?
Staples found me, yeah.
Wow. I think it's much harder for, I don't want to sound negative about it, and we'll talk more as we get into the podcast about your thoughts, but if, you know, as a young attorney, let's just use the attorney population and the industry, 80-90% of us are solos or very small practices. And,
right,
you know, when you live around the big cities, you think big law, corporate law, it's all but it's a very small part of the industry. So it's hard as a young person getting started. I mean, you know, I'm just getting started with this podcast, and you were nice enough to come on and support me, and I have some other people I'm talking to and growing it, but I've been practicing. I'm 53. I've been practicing for a while. So getting started, if you're in your early 30s, it's hard. There's a lot of competition, noise, you know, things like that. So maybe later in the podcast, we can get into more about your advice about that in today's world, because you had a little bit of an advantage in that there weren't so many people screaming for attention, right? Back when
well,
you got started.
That's true. That's true. And but I think one of the points that you have to keep in mind for anybody, whether they're just starting or they've been around for a while,
right,
is that you kind of have to know what you can do, and you have to do it well, and you have to kind of be super reliable. So for me, with the publishing in particular, meeting deadlines was just what was essential, and
right,
it was well appreciated by the publishers because they have deadlines, and so that's you kind of build a reputation.
Right, sure, and I'm sure writing's not for everybody. I mean, just because we're lawyers doesn't mean we're all great writers. I'm a business attorney like yourself, but I you know, I could write a book. I think I'd need some help. I'm much better at drafting a contract or writing an operating agreement or, you know, things like that. It's more my bailiwick.
Mm-hmm,
that's kind of the way But I think you're right. So people have to kind of focus on what they're good at and become better at it. I don't know if the word expert is something we can use as lawyers, but...
Well, when you do it long enough, you kind of get expert at it.
At that level. So tell me about your company. So your company is called Big Ideas for Small Business, Inc., which is really a publishing company, right? It produces content.
We produce, that's exactly what we do. We produce content and information. We publicize information. And we're out there, really, a lot of the information that we do is free, that we give it away because I think small businesses need it.
Right.
And
that was my next question, was the monetary question, but go ahead. Yeah. How do you monetize that? Go ahead.
Well, yeah, that's a separate, I have kind of an unusual business model,
okay.
if you will. So, but that's why I'm able to give away the content.
Okay. So if you don't make money on the content, you're giving away the content. How do you run your business?
Well, I do make money on some. Okay, I do make money on a lot of the content. So
okay.
But I am able, and because I, as I said, with my arrangements with large corporations that want to message their product, a service, something new, and they're willing to pay for it. So that's one way. And another way is that I make money by doing continuing ed courses for accountants and attorneys, and that's a good income stream. And so
I see, like seminars, basically.
Well, I do all kinds of things from books and webinars and seminars and.
Right, they got your books
above.
Are for sale. So for CPAs books, and attorneys,
and the books are for sale too. The books are for consumers, but I do a lot of work with, as I said, with in the tax area for accountants and professional and lawyers.
Okay, so those CLE stuff, those are in person, right?
No, not necessarily. Oh. No, some of it is a lot of it is online. In fact, most of it is online. It's not in person anymore.
Okay, so are you doing it through one of these services?
Excuse me?
Are you doing it like through one of these services, like what are they called, like Lawline or things like that, or do you do it on your own?
I do a lot through. I do things through CCH, AICPA, uh-huh. Kaplan, and all of the and other the other continuing ed services.
I see. So anybody can sign up for the course. It's a video. They can watch it at any time. They get their credits.
Precisely.
Online. Got it. Okay.
That's it. Yeah.
So what? Let's talk about advice for small businesses because. I've done some research on you. I forget how I found your name. I think I was just doing research on small business influencers and people that work in the space, and you came up as top five, I think, a couple near the top of the list. And I saw that you were named 100 small business influencers in the nation, and it's in your bio too, actually. Where did does that come from?
Well, this is a while back. Small Business Trends ran this. It's not a contest, if you will, but they ran this for 5 years in a row, and I was named
Stephen Applebaum
within the top 100 5 years in a row. Then they stopped doing it, but it was kind of nice to be included along with FedEx and, you know,
right.
The Wall Street Journal and Barbara Welton.
So it was like a survey, basically. They surveyed
people? Yeah. Although I do garner a lot of awards from all around the world for my blogs, they just come through, and are recognized.
People repost and share, and it just gets around virally.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about business ideas for small business, because that's really what my podcast focuses on. So when I started it, The Accidental Entrepreneur, it was really out of a frustration, I guess, for the lack of a better term. Of dealing with small business owners all the time that didn't take the time to prepare and do things, and it would just all happen by accident. And usually by accident means that it doesn't work out. Very few people just succeed by accident. They gotta kind of take some steps. So I was wondering what kind of advice you give to small business owners that are, you know, looking to get started or, you know, looking to get past some obstacle in their business career to be successful.
Well, I think the key is it's not just having a good idea for a business. It's not just knowing that your product or service is desired by the consumer,
right.
And therefore you should go into business.
Right,
you
have everybody's going to buy.
Right. You have to know, first of all, about yourself and your abilities, and it's not just dealing with that product or service. When you're in business, you have to wear all the hats and see to all the responsibilities that running a business entails. So whether you do it yourself or you outsource and turn to other professionals, it's still all the responsibility is on you. And so you have to be that kind of person who is willing to take on that responsibility. And running a business is not necessarily a 9-to-5 occupation.
Not even close.
It's 24/7.
Right.
Is more like it.
Yeah.
For many people. And when you hear, I'm always amused when people say, oh, I want to go into my own business because so then I can set my own hours and I can have this flexibility. And that may be true to some extent, but it also means that if something happens, you're the one who has to see to it, regardless of the time of day or if you're on vacation or what.
Right.
So
yeah.
So there's, you have to have that kind of personality. I think that's one thing. And then I think you have to be prepared to continually self-educate. And it's not only staying up with what's going on in your industry, but what's going on with government regulations, with your taxes, what's in your community.
Right.
All of these things impact your business day in and day out.
Right.
And you need to stay up on this. And so if you're not the kind of person that enjoys self-educating, I think you're going to really have problems. And I know that some people, for example, rely heavily on a CPA for their taxes.
Right.
But it's my experience and why I publish tax books like J.K. Lasser's Small Business Taxes is because you're the business owner that has to make business decisions, and
right.
you have to understand what the tax implications of those decisions are, like whether to hire a new employee or use an independent contractor and what that means.
Right.
So that's, you know, sort of my mission is to make sure that people understand all of the changes and things that happen every single day. But also, I think anybody who's thinking about going into business has to determine whether the big picture is for them, not just their great idea.
Right. No, I think it's a big, even on a small, if it's a little business, it's still a big endeavor, right? There's still a lot of moving parts and a lot of things to learn. And you're right, a lot of people, I mean, they don't even take the time, a lot of them, to write a business plan, even a simplified plan that lays out whether their product is going to, just because it's a great idea doesn't mean it should be a business. Or maybe you shouldn't be the person running the business. You don't have the skills. You're going to have to go out and hire people and find professionals and rely on people with skills that you don't have. But I think,
or if it's financially viable, it could be a
right.
great idea.
It doesn't make any money.
But people might not want to pay for it.
Right. Yeah. People, just because you buy something for $1 and you sell it for $3 doesn't mean you're making money, right? And people don't
not
do that
necessarily.
Yeah. I mean,
they may not want to pay $3.
Right.
Or when you factor in
other
your
costs.
Time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And your time. Unless you realistically price out your own time, and I think this is certainly a trap for many small business owners.
Right.
They look at their overhead costs, but they don't think about their time.
Right.
And then they're not making money. What's the point?
Right. Right. What's the point? They might as well just go get a job.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think that's a huge problem that I see. I get business owners that come to me and they're like closing their doors 4 or 5 months after they opened because they didn't make plans and anticipate all this stuff that they should have learned about or read about or stayed on top of or, you know, whatever happens to be. It's frustrating. So when it comes to – so you had mentioned before that you've written a bunch of books. One, the J.K. Lasser, I guess, is a cup. There's a couple of those that you wrote?
Oh, a lot of those, yes. So I have J.K. Lasser's Small Business Taxes, which is my longest-running book. And that it really is – soup to nuts for a small business owner, and we do a supplement that comes out because the book gets published in October, November, and then things still happen.
Right.
And so we do a supplement at the end of January, beginning of February. So so that's one book. Another is J.K. Lasser's 1001 Deductions and Tax Breaks. And this year I updated an earlier version of J.K. Lasser's Guide to Self-Employment. And basically what that guide does is kind of address all the back issue matters for a self-employed person. Because, like we said, marketing is sort of what everybody thinks about. But everybody might not think about the insurance they need.
Right.
or dealing with zoning.
Right.
You know, many people want to start a business and they think, oh, I'm going to run it from home. Well, maybe you're in an HOA that won't let you run it from home.
Right.
Yeah. So all of these issues, I like to kind of raise these questions and make sure people think about them.
Yeah, absolutely. I got business owners that rent space in town, and they don't want a lot of involvement. I can handle the lease. Can you just look at this? And I go, all right, they don't want to spend any money. Next thing you know, they call me. They tell me the town called them because they asked about a sign. And not only is the town bringing up issues about a sign, but they're bringing issues about parking and about, you know, square footage. And there's a neighbor next door that uses all kinds of things that they never looked into or anticipate. Now, a lot of your books focus on Florida tax law?
No.
No.
No, nothing. Everything is federal.
So it's
nothing
all federal stuff.
It's local. Yes, everything is federal. So it's nationwide.
Okay, I got it. Because some of the employment issues, aren't they state by state? They vary?
Well, lots of things are state by state, but you can generalize in saying that do you need workers' comp for yourself, for your employees? Can you get in? Can you get out? You know those kinds of things. So raising the questions are there. It varies a little bit by state, but I think that the main ideas are there. Unemployment insurance and those kinds of things.
Got
the
it.
Rates are different from state to state, but the concept is the same.
Okay. And J.K. Lasser, they only publish tax publications, basically?
Essentially, tax publications. J.K. Lasser was a CPA, and he started the first tax guide back in when they passed the first tax code in 1939.
Ah, okay.
So that sort of became the imprint for these books, which are now published by John Wiley and Sons.
Got it. Yeah, I didn't think J.K. Lasser is around anymore, right?
No. No, he's not.
So, no, I saw in your bio, you also mentioned a book, Smooth Failing.
Yes.
Yeah, I'd like to know about that. I like that title.
Yeah, Smooth Failing was a book I did where I interviewed a lot of personalities that are well known within the small business community, like the head of SCORE,
uh-huh.
the person who heads up the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council, the person who founded Palo Alto Software that publishes, does B plans, business plans. So a lot of these people that are kind of well-known, been around a long time, all made big mistakes. Who hasn't, right?
Right.
If you're around long enough, you're going to make big mistakes. But the idea of the book was to show the mistakes that they made and how they addressed them so that the reader doesn't have to do the same thing.
Right.
That's really kind of the idea
it. I mean, if you don't make mistakes, I don't think you learn as much as if everything goes well. Until one day it hits a brick wall.
Well, that's kind of it. Bobby Jones, the great golfer, said,
yeah.
I never learned anything from a match that I lost, that I won.
Right.
So
that's true.
When you lose, that you learn.
Yeah. Is Smooth Failing still available, like online on Amazon?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's available through Amazon.
Mm-hmm. Okay, good. I'd like to take a look at it. I'm trying to think. I just thought of something while you were saying that. I see you're also on the advisory board of the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council.
Yes, this is an advocacy group that works on behalf to push issues that are in the interests of small business. You know, we don't. If you think about it, small business owners don't really have lobbyists
right.
in the same way as major corporations.
Not
so
at
what
all,
do
right.
we have? We have a couple of advocacy groups. We have NFIB, National Federation of Independent Business, and we have the Small Business and Entrepreneurship Council. And so what we do is try to inform the members of the group. Anybody can support this. It's a by donation, mm-hmm. and we've done things like we've gone to regulators. We spent a day once going from regulator to regulator, from SEC to IRS. This was back when they were trying to work out some of the Affordable Care Act regs, and we did the who else did we do? I think we did the FTC with net neutrality, and we, uh-huh. anyway, we went around and we discussed the regulations, proposals, and what they were working on, and the interests of small business, and trying to make sure that the people that write the rules understand what the interests of small business really are, because I think, frankly, I think small business is very misunderstood. I think when you say small business to a lot of people in government, they're thinking about corporations on NASDAQ. They're not thinking of corporations on Main Street.
Right. Yeah, they're not thinking of the small business owner that has a storefront or whatever.
Right, even though over 97% of all businesses in the U.S. are small. It still doesn't kind of register, other than lip service.
Right.
Get a lot,
all the lip
especially
service.
During
especially election time.
During election time.
Yeah.
Everybody says, "Oh, I'm for small business. I'm for small business."
Right.
But the bottom line is that a lot of the rules are not helpful for small business. In fact, they're very detrimental.
Right.
And you'd be just shocked at some of the rules that are around. And I had this one restaurant owner I knew in New York, small little one restaurant, and they had liquor, and they had to account to the state by ounces. They had to look at their bottles and add up the ounces. I mean,
you're
like,
kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. So who makes these rules?
Right.
And then the penalties on small businesses can put you out of business. And the penalties are a lot of times are, who knows, this other fellow I knew who ran a nursing home, really, like, you know, really ran a great home. I mean, never had a case of abuse or of an elderly or anything. And the health department came in and he had a dented can in the kitchen. And a dented can cost him a penalty.
Ugh. Yeah,
I mean, it's just these little things that most small business owners, who could even think about it, keep track of it or anything. And I think that there really needs to be more of a warning system rather than the first offense, a penalty. I mean, even in IRS, there's a first-time abatement. I think most small business owners don't know that if you have a penalty.
Right.
You might get it waived if it's the first time.
Right.
Under certain conditions, and so that's a good thing to know about, but not everybody does.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And you're a small business, you don't have the resources to look into it necessarily, or you don't know what is going on until it happens. I think that's
until it happens. That's exactly right. And things happen all the time.
Yeah, that's how you learn. You learn because you violated the rule that you didn't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very and unfortunately, sometimes the people you're dealing with on the other end, they don't even have any flexibility to help you, because they just, this is a government job for them. They just work.
That's true. And in even if they want to help you, sometimes they just don't have the creativity or the ability to kind of think outside the box and figure out a way to make things work.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we have in New Jersey. It's a crazy state. We have all kinds of crazy things go on with, because not just business law. I also do a lot of estates and trusts, and every once in a while I'm involved with a probate or someone with the probate court. And there's crazy things and fees that the state charges for looking at things and doing it. You know, they're not even doing any work. They just want a fee to pay for county services and things like that. I'm right in the middle of a case right now, so it's definitely difficult. And I think as a small business owner, it's a hard lesson to learn that way, right? It would be better if you knew about it and made your best efforts to avoid it.
Well, years ago, I have had occasion to have, there was a small business commissioner in New York City. He was a great guy, and I had him on my radio show many times. And what he was trying to do was to create a way for there to be like one license. In other words, you didn't have to, if you were opening a business, you didn't have to have the health department, the fire department,
right,
the building department, that there would be a way to have just a single kind of, an exam to
right,
make sure that everything is okay, and so that businesses could open quicker. Because it's been my experience, I don't know about you, but a business may say, they raise X amount of dollars, and they say, well, we're going to be in business by March 1st, and then
right,
so we'll start making revenue, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, it's all better than projections.
4 months later,
right,
they still don't have the approval for the sign, and the building department won't let them open the doors.
Right, I find that all the time. People go out of business because of that.
And that's right, because then they didn't have enough, they didn't raise enough initial capital
to
sustain them through that limbo period.
Yep.
And so I think this is good advice for people to understand the realities of that if you want to have a business here, you have to deal with the government, and you have to expect the worst and plan accordingly.
Yeah, no. Look, I'm in Union County, New Jersey. I'm not in Manhattan. Right, we have a small town, but we have a downtown. We have retail shops and professionals and so forth. It can be so difficult to get things approved, especially if you're doing something retail or something a little bit offline, that you have to go in front of at least the planning board, maybe not the board of adjustment and the zoning board, but at least the planning board to get preliminary approval. And people don't even understand the process. And then they go in and they ask for things, they try to do the application themselves, they don't hire an attorney, they go in front of the board has questions, they got to go back three or four times, then there's other people on the list, so they got to wait. And I've
yeah,
had
that's
businesses.
It. They have to come back and back and back.
Yeah.
That's it.
And there's no accommodation to, you know, preliminarily approve something, you just have to submit this and then we're all good. And I think you're right. If there was a streamlined process where you didn't have to get six inspections and have all these people, I have a woman who's trying to divide her property. This is not business. It's a home. So she bought the property with a house on it with the expectation she would build another house, sell it. That would be like her retirement. And the lot's a double lot. So she doesn't, in order to divide the lot, she has the right to divide the lot. It's been since last summer. We still haven't got in front of the board. They've had engineers look at it, and then they wanted to change this. They wanted drainage. They wanted to know all these different things, curb cuts, and why is this? But then you need a variance for the curb cut. And finally, you get the right person in the room and says, well, if we just change it this way, we move it by a foot, then can we
right,
avoid the variance? Oh, yeah, you can do that. Why didn't you just tell us that at the beginning? And then there's some towns where the zoning official will literally sit down with you and say, listen, if you make these three changes, I can approve this, doesn't need to go to the board. And then there's other ones that just, they'll just send it to the board every single time. And I think it's very frustrating. I have developers and business owners in these different towns that there's certain towns they absolutely won't have anything to do with because they don't want to deal with the zoning officials because they're just very difficult. And I think that as a business owner, I mean, that's like a whole education in and of itself, right? So if you're starting a business, maybe you're opening a storefront or something, I guess, like you said before, you've thought of a product or you're buying a product, you're having a product made. That's like what you do, right? That's your part of the business. You have no idea what you're getting into from a land use standpoint, dealing with the community that you're now going to try to do business in.
And that's one aspect. There are many, many, many other aspects. For example, intellectual property of a business.
Yeah, good advice. Right?
I think that owners don't appreciate how important it is to protect their trade secrets,
right,
their customer lists and their pricing lists and all of that, and when they need to obtain a trademark protection or all of these things are so important, but they don't have a clue.
Right.
Because it is complicated, and In some cases, it's costly. In some cases, it's not costly.
No, I mean, to get a non-disclosure agreement when you're talking to people about your idea is not that difficult.
That's exactly right.
I also find business owners don't ask their employees who are coming on board to sign anything, and it's harder to do, at least in New Jersey, it's harder to do after the fact, to sign anything about, maybe they don't have, you know, really, really deep trade secrets, but if an employee leaves and steals all their clients and all their customers,
exactly,
that could be a problem. They don't sign anything.
Yes.
They don't sign any kind of an agreement or even looked. And then you come in as the lawyer, as the business lawyer, right? And you're trying to fix and clean up all
the
situations.
And it's not always fixable.
No,
and that's the problem. And what a shame, because it was so easy to have avoided in the first place. It wasn't a big deal up front.
Right. Well, that's kind of my mission through the podcast and working with people, and I'm rebuilding my website. I want to get business owners, the real small business owners that you and I are talking about, to do a couple of simple things when they get started to protect themselves. So as they move forward and they learn that, you know, their new employee that's been working for them 6 months has been trying to set up another business that's going to compete with them, that they just put something simple in place that at least makes the other person think twice about, you know, doing it.
I have
a friend of mine who owns a salon. Actually, they cut my hair, and they have simple non-competes with, their hairdressers, because they don't expect the hairdresser to never work again, but they don't want him to open a salon down the street that could take away, because, you know, if you have a stylist, you may very well follow them to another place. So they simply ask their people, listen, if you're gonna leave us, we don't steal our customers. If they go, you know, you can't do anything. You can't force people to go get their haircut somewhere. But you got to be at least, I don't know, 5 miles from here, 10 miles, or whatever the issue was. And they did have somebody leave, join a salon down the street. We sent him a cease and desist letter. We sent it to the owner. They backed off. They moved her to a place that was farther away that a lot of her customers would not go to because it's farther. So, you know, even in that regard, you think, oh, you're just cutting hair. It's just a salon. It's a men's salon. We're shaving. And all that type of barber stuff. What do I need this stuff for? Well, you do, because they had somebody fill a chair and bring in a lot of revenue. And she didn't even open her own salon. She got wooed away by a competitor. So I think your point is a very good point and very important that, you know, for the growing population of listeners that I have, which hopefully now that you're on the podcast, it will grow more, that people take the time to not, you don't have to become a Harvard Business School graduate expert. You just need to put some things in writing and talk to a few professionals and start to learn things. You don't have to learn it overnight. We know that's not possible. But, you know, if you're dealing with food, you better call your town health inspector. You know, I had somebody who's delivering food. It's like farm to table, but they deal with the farmers. It's like a fresh box business. Mm-hmm. So they get the farmer's goods and they put it in the box and they deliver it. You subscribe to it. And her business has been phenomenal. Well, she and her husband's on Wall Street. They're smart people. She called me and said, you know, can I do this out of my home without a warehouse? And I said, you know, probably not. Well, turns out we talked to the health inspector. They came by. They said, if you set up coolers and you do this, this, and this, you're not preparing the food, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And she was able to do it. But then there's other people. I've seen a guy online. I don't know him, but he posted he's making wings. Like, everybody raves about his wings out of his house. I guarantee that he has not had a conversation with the health inspector.
I would agree with you on that.
Yeah.
I think that what startups need to understand is that spending a few dollars on a professional, whether it's an attorney, an accountant, for different matters, will save you so much down the line.
So for example,
you know, there are all these sites where you can draft your own. There are templates to do your own non-disclosure agreement, or incorporate yourself, or do all this. And I say, okay, that's fine. You want to do that, make a draft, but have it reviewed by an attorney.
And by the way, those fees generally are not that much lower than a local practitioner is going to charge you, you know?
Well, that's true, too. And also, I think only the local practitioner is going to understand your unique situation.
Right.
And you may have special concerns or special considerations that are not part of boilerplate language in an online template. And I encourage people to look at the templates because it's a great starting point.
Yeah, you learn things.
But you learn, yes, you learn from it, but it's not the end of the road. It's not the end of your work with that. I think you need professional advice.
Yeah. No, it's the LegalZooms of the world that I really think have kind of commoditized, you know, what we do. Even on the estate planning side, somehow they can do a will for $179, and I can't do it for under $2,000 or $1,500. I don't understand it. And usually they're wrong because that particular area of law is very state specific.
Yeah.
So, you know, templates may be a good way to start, like you said, but yeah, I mean.
Or just something like people incorporate, and that's
right.
Great.
Yeah.
But then they don't know to hold their annual meetings.
Yeah, they don't keep any books and records. They don't have a corporate seal. They don't have bylaws.
They don't have bylaws. They don't respect the corporation. And then, they wonder why they get sued personally.
Yeah, they don't understand. So in New Jersey, that's why I'm much more particular to LLCs, because you set the rules. Now, you do have to set the rules, but you're not subject to a lot of the corporate requirements. But you still need an operating agreement. You still got to say who's liable and who's not. Look, I have two businesses that I'm selling right now. Actually, one's a real estate transaction, but they both involve corporations in New Jersey, very old corporations. They either don't have bylaws or can't find them. We couldn't find a certificate of incorporation. We had to pull that online and get that. They have no books and records.
The one,
the husband passed away, and the wife's selling the property. And it's a large buyer. It's a developer that's buying up the whole neighborhood, and they're doing all kinds of stuff. I think they're being funded by one of the big wirehouses, Goldman Sachs or something like that. And they have legal requirements. Like they have a checklist of things they want. So they want to see bylaws. And I mean, this is a little tiny corporation that was selling whatever out of this building. I don't know. I don't even know what they do. But yeah. And then, so then I'm the guy who says, okay, well, what are we going to do? Well, we need to create some sort of bylaws. So now I'm creating bylaws for them to sell the business just for a transaction when they should have been keeping it. And they're lucky they didn't get sued
Didn't get caught before. Yeah. Another mistake that I see that many small business owners do is that they commingle their personal finances with their business finances.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have a separate bank account. They don't have a separate credit card.
Yeah.
They don't have a separate PayPal account. They do everything. Oh, this was for business. This was for personal. Well, I can tell you from years of experience that, first of all, you don't remember when it comes to tax time. And second of all, the IRS is certainly not going to be happy about that.
Right. And a good attorney is going to be able to pierce that and go after you personally if you're commingling, you know, everything. And you know, it's funny. Look, as a business owner, one of the advantages in being a business owner versus a W-2 employee is that you can expense things that you use for your business. If you go to lunch and you're taking out a client or a potential customer, you get to deduct that. You can't do that as a W-2 employee. So I always say that the difference is you're a W-2 employee, you pay your taxes first, and then you keep what's left over. As a business owner, you spend your money on your business and you pay tax on what's left over. But you still gotta keep records. You have to keep things separately. You know, don't pay your mortgage out of your business for your home, I mean, right?
Exactly.
Don't pay your wife's car payment.
And you'd be shocked at how many people do that.
Of course.
You would just be shocked.
Yeah, of course. And sometimes it gets more complicated because let's say you use your cell phone for business, right? But you have a Verizon plan and you have your children and your wife's all on the same plan. And it's too much of a hassle. What are you going to write? Two checks. You can make two payments from, which is probably what you should do, but I'm sure people don't. And they just put it through and it probably gets expensed because the CPA doesn't know what they're looking at when they're looking at this. So, you know, the IRS, they always have trouble with policing some of this stuff and figuring it out. And next thing you know, you're getting audited because something looked funny on your tax return. You're like, huh? So, yeah, it's always difficult. And then you're negotiating things. But I think that's another good point is that people need to, I used to say, pretend like you're in business. People don't they have a business and they don't really feel like they're in business. And they have to pretend like they are, like they work for a company. So, you know what? Something else I find, Barbara, I don't know what your opinion is on it. I find that when people are business owners, entrepreneurs, they're building their business, they never make the transition from being, let's use an analogy, the shoemaker to the person who's running a business and has people working for them to make shoes. You know, they couldn't walk away and move their office down the street and still run their business.
Well, that's true. If you've ever read E-Myth Revisited.
Yeah, E-Myth is a very good book, yeah.
Which is kind of, and I had
that's Michael Gerber, right? Michael Gerber?
Michael Gerber, yeah. I had him on my radio show, and he's a really interesting guy.
Yeah.
And
met him
but
a couple
times. The point is, if you can't replicate your business, if it's not, if you want to bake pie, he says, if you want to bake pies, go to work in a bakery.
Right.
If you want to run a bakery, it's a different ballgame.
I think he's the one who told me that if you're basically the employee, or you're doing all the work yourself, or you can't delegate, or you really can't walk away from it, like he says, the E-Myth, you're really just an employee of a company that you also just happen to own.
Mm-hmm.
You're really not a business owner. At least you're not acting like one. That's a great book. That's a great series of books.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think he authored one for attorneys. I think he had co-authored one with two attorneys about, you know, E-Myth for attorneys. They probably do other professions too. Okay, so Barbara, if somebody wants to interact with you, read your publications, obviously they can search for your books on, I assume, Amazon or other sites. How can they get a hold of you? What's the best way to find you online?
Find me at BigIdeasForSmallBusiness.com, the website, BigIdeasForSmallBusiness.com. And on the website, there are links to all of the books. There are a place to sign up for Idea of the Day, which pops in your email every morning, and to see the blogs that come out and other resources. I have a tweet chat calendar. There are tweet chats that are continually going on. For example, I'm doing one with the SBA on the 21st. And so it's helpful for business owners who want to learn something.
So is that like Twitter Live where they can like submit
it's
questions?
It's Twitter Live. Exactly.
Very good.
That's what it is.
Yeah, I think I originally found you on Twitter and then I connected with you on LinkedIn. So I assume you're on all the social media platforms as well. And we'll put this all in the show notes so people don't have to, you know, write it down while you're talking. They'll see it below the episode. So thanks very much for coming on. I appreciate all your time. And let's definitely stay
my
in touch.
Pleasure. You betcha.
All right. Thanks, Barbara.
And good luck to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you like our podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and iHeartRadio. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at beinlaw33@gmail.com. That's BEINLAW33@gmail.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur has been written, directed, and produced by Mitchell Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about Mitchell and his practice, you can find him on social media or visit his website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.